Welcome to the Defend the Fort podcast, a product of the Tigers Sports Network and Eagle Radio.
It's over. Fort Hays has won the national championship.
This is Gerard Welbrock, and we appreciate you joining us as we visit with current and former Fort Hays State Tigers.
2 seconds, 1 second, that's going to do it. The Fort Hays State Tigers are national champions. Fort Hays State national champions.
The Defend the Fort podcast is brought to you by Diamond R Jewelry on the Bricks in beautiful downtown Hays. Snap is low, the hold down, the kick is up, it's got enough distance, will it get through? It is gone!
It's good!
He hit it! 56 yards! A career long for Dante Brown, and we go to overtime! The Defend the Fort podcast brought to you by Diamond R Jewelry. They're on the Bricks in downtown Hays. Hey, stop by for a new and innovative way at looking and purchasing at quality jewelry. Diamond R is the most cutting-edge, style-driven, and customer-focused jewelry company in western Kansas. You'll be glad you stopped by, and they've got the best and largest selection of engagement and wedding rings. So stop on by Diamond R Jewelry on the Bricks in beautiful downtown Hays or online at diamondkansas.com. The history of Fort Hays State University track and field and cross country is steep and full of tradition. And at the top of the list is John Mason. The Phillipsburg native was a 14-time NAIA All-American and won 8 NAIA National Track and Field Championships in addition to cross country titles. He holds the records for the 1,500 meters and 3,000 meter steeplechase, which are the two oldest school records still on the books for the outdoor season at Fort Hays State. And Mason still holds the indoor mile record at 403.8, set back in 1969, and was part of a school record 2 mile relay team whose 1966 mark still stands as the best in Fort Hays State history. Mason has represented the United States in many international competitions, and he's our latest guest on the Defend the Fort podcast. We do these podcasts, and we talk to former student-athletes, and it's always interesting to hear how they got connected with Fort Hays State and how they ended up as a Tiger, and I always kind of like to start there, and we'll ask you the same thing. Just tell us about your journey and how you ended up being a Fort Hays State Tiger track and field runner.
It's kind of funny. When I was running in high school, I was recruited by different colleges, and coming from a small school or in Phillipsburg, Kansas, small town, I was kind of a country bunkum, and I've had letters from Fort Hays, from Alex Francis, and K-State, and different places, and the funny thing about it is I kind of made up my mind I was going to go to Kansas State, and DeLos Dodds, he was a head track coach at Kansas State, and he was going to come and signed me up on a Saturday. And my dad, he was kind of afraid I was going to get lost in the big city of Manhattan. So he called up Alex Francis on a Friday, the day before. And he said, my son's going to come. He's going to go run for Kansas State. And I'd rather see him run at Fort Hays. He said, if you want John, you better get down here right away and sign him up. So Alex got in his car, drove to Phillipsburg, and we had a good chat and everything else. And Alex says, and I committed that I'll run for Fort Hays. And my father said, well, we have to put that in writing. And Alex says, well, we just do a handshake. We don't have to have any letter. And my father said, well, you know, I'm in the appliance business. And being in the appliance business, you have to have contracts. And so he got out a piece of paper and had Alex Francis, myself, sign it that I was not going to run at Kansas State and I was going to run at Fort Hays. So my dad called up to Lost Dawes and said, "I'm sorry, you're a day late. John's going to run at Fort Hays," and I never, ever regretted it.
That's like an early version of a national letter of intent, I guess.
Your dad was ahead of his time. Hand scribbled notes is exactly what it was.
Your dad was ahead of his time on that, and now it's kind of become common practice. And you mentioned Coach Francis, and obviously when you talk track and field coaches, just coaches at Fort Hays State, but track and field and cross country, across the state, across the country, Alex Francis has to be mentioned with every group. So successful. What was it like running for him? I mean, we hear stories all the time about Coach Francis. We could probably go on for hours just doing that. But what was it like to run for the legendary Alex Francis?
You know, he was just like a father. You know, when I first went there, I just tell you a little backup story, but we went out, and the year before, the Fort Hays had the National Cross Country Championship. They had won the state champion, or not the state, but the national championship in cross country. And here I was a freshman, and it was a very, very hot Sunday afternoon, and the boys, they wanted to run around Custer Island. And it was about like a 6-mile run, and it must have been about 102 degrees. And the seniors took off, and of course, they always run as fast as they could just show the freshmen how good they were. And I said, "Well, you know, I'm just going to stay right with them." And so I hung in with those guys, Don Lake and some of those great guys. And we came to the stadium, was all done. And the guy said, "Well, we're going in and shower." And I said, "You know, I'm going to cool down." Actually, I was dead tired, and I walked over there to the golf course, and I drank water from the sprinkler systems, and I was so dehydrated. I must drink a gallon of water, and I went over to another hydrant, drank another gallon, and I came back, felt all cool, and we had a meeting, and Alex Francis said, "Well, tomorrow we're going to have our first official workout. We're going to meet at the golf course, going to run hills, and meet at the bottom of the hill." He said, "Whatever you do, don't drink the water at the golf course. It's polluted." And everybody left, and I said, "Coach, you know, I drank that water, but I feel good." And I was staying at the in a house there on Ash Street. It was Henry McFarland. He was a biology professor, and I stayed up on the in his apartment up on the top floor. And Coach Francis came by that night to check on me, and I was there, and I had a 104-degree temperature, unconscious. They rushed me to the hospital. I was hospitalized for some time. They called my parents and didn't think I was going to make it. I had, typhoid fever, and so I didn't run my first semester there in cross country. And Alex became just like a father to me, and I said, just from there, you know, I said, "I'm a dedicated Tiger, and I'm never going to leave." And Alex was a just like a second father to me. And he could take, and what I found out in cross country, he could take us country boys from little towns. Like, I was probably from one of the bigger towns, Phillipsburg, but he had boys from like Johnson, Buckland, Otis, and he took us country boys, and he made good runners out of us.
Well, it's a phenomenal story there, and you're exactly right with him able to take runners from places I'm sure a lot of other schools had never heard of, and obviously turn them into not just good but great runners. The championships that were won in cross country, and such a good motivator. I mean, he seemed to have his unique ways of getting the very best out of every single runner he had in his program.
Yes, he did. You know, he'd always say, "You know, don't show me. I mean, don't tell me. You just show me how good you are." And a good example about how good of teams he had. I remember back in 1968, Fort Hays won the NAIA National Cross Country Championships in Omaha, Nebraska. And the next week, we went to the National AAU in Van Cortlandt Park, New York, and that was a U.S. Championships. And here we had teams from NCAA, NAIA, junior colleges, the armed forces, people from other countries, and Villanova was there, and they had won the NCAA cross country championships the week before, just like we won the NAIA. And in that whole race, at the finish, Villanova, they won. Chicago Track Club, they were second, and Fort Hays State was third. Five country bunkums got third in this U.S. championship.
Well, we're visiting with John Mason, a former Fort Hays State track and field and cross country standout, and what, 15-time All-American in track and field and cross country, 8-time NAIA national track champion, in addition to a couple of cross country national titles he's a part of. Where track has led you, just looking at, we could talk for hours about your accolades and all the different things that you were a part of. Running really opened some doors for you. You got to see some incredible places, run in some big races against some world-renowned athletes at a pretty young age. Pretty hard, I'm sure, at the time to even comprehend what track and field and cross country did for you at that time.
Yeah, it track and field was very good to me. It gave me a college education. After college, I went on, ran for the Pacific Coast Club out in California. I was on many U.S. national teams and traveled all over the world. There's probably not one country or one city that I haven't ran a race in. So, yes, it was very enjoyable, and I look back and many, many, many memories.
Where did you develop your love of running and realize that you were probably pretty good at it?
Well, another story. When I was 11 years old, they had, just like they had the coronavirus epidemic going on, back when I was 11 years old, they had the polio epidemic. And I was stricken in the summer when I was 11 years old with polio. I was hospitalized in Lincoln, Nebraska all summer and the whole works. And when I got out, I had to have therapy, but we didn't have like therapy like they have today. But my dad had to do it to me. I missed a lot of school. And I found out that, some of the running kind of helped me. And then so I got the joy of running and really enjoyed it when I was younger. And then I started competitively running when I was a sophomore in high school. And since then, I never looked back.
Well, certainly have run a lot of races, one of a lot of races. We're visiting with John Mason, former Fort Hays State track and field standout, member of the Tigers Sports Hall of Fame, the NAIA Hall of Fame, the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. And we'll get into all of those as we move along. Still holds several records at Fort Hays State and some of the best times in some of the races. What was it like back then? Fort Hays State rolls in, and you mentioned some NAI cross-country championships, but even on the track and field side and some of the big races that you competed against Division I athletes, big-time, big-name schools, when Fort Hays State would roll in there and not only hold their own, but certainly win their fair share of events and races.
Yeah, when I was running Fort Hays, I was invited to a lot of invitational races, like back in Madison Square Garden, like the Watermaker Mile. I was able to run in the old and the new gardens in Boston and things like that. And I had the jersey on Fort Hays State, and people always would ask, "Where's Fort Hays? Was that a actual fort, or are you in the army or whatever?" But our team, we ran a lot of cross-country races, and Fort Hays got on the map from all the good athletes that we've had, and competing at the Kansas Relays, Drake Relays, Texas Relays. So we did our share of meets.
Well, certainly Fort Hays State held their own, and John Mason won his fair share. I think I was reading somewhere you won 7 of 9 races as a sophomore, and those two races you didn't win, you finished in second place. So you had a lot of success early on in your running career at Fort Hays State, kind of set the table for your outstanding career.
Yeah, it was fun. I think when I first started running, the two races I got beat was by John Lawson, who was Kansas NCAA cross country champion. But funny thing about it is that later on we became teammates back in California and very, very good friends and on a lot of relays together.
And then your junior and senior year, 21 cross country races, and you go 21-0. I mean, that's unfathomable to think about, but obviously you You found your stride, so to speak, those last 2 years, and you were literally unbeatable.
Well, I really enjoy cross country, and ran against the best. My very last cross country race for the Fort Hays was at the U.S. Championships in New York City. I was fortunate enough to win the race and set a record that it was like a 50-year-old record. I got broken, and then I held it for like 22 years before it was broken again. But great times running at Fort Hays, and ran a lot of miles around that golf course and around Custer Island, up Kay Hill, and back and forth to Ellis and Catherine, everywhere else.
You know, you mentioned, you know, cross country. You obviously had great success. You had great success in track and field, the 1500. Did you like one over the other? And maybe the differences between, I mean, it's running, but obviously it's the track and field and cross country are completely different.
Yes, they are. Generally, you don't see a miler being a good distance runner, you know, being running 6 miles, 10,000 meters. But cross country, I really enjoyed cross country because it really developed the endurance, the stamina, and running the hills, and I think it just really made me a lot stronger as a runner. But like in '68, I was the U.S. champion in the 1500 meters, and also the U.S. champion cross country, which is probably unthinkable today as a middle distance runner being a cross country champion.
Well, it's going to bring up that 68 was obviously a big year, an Olympic year, and you ran for the Pacific Coast Track Club. Tell us about how that all transpired and your experiences with them.
Pacific Coast Club was the most elite club that you could find, and finished college, or my last year of college there, I was invited to go to be on the U.S. team to Southeast Asia. And on the way to Southeast Asia, I stopped off in Los Angeles, and here comes a couple of the coach stopped and interviewed me and said, I'd like to have you run for the Pacific Coast Club. And I didn't even realize they had running clubs after college. So I went to Southeast Asia. I was over there, toured and ran all over there, Vietnam and Korea, everywhere. And I was gone for 6 months, or not 6 months, but 6 weeks. I came back, and they said I was a little bit late getting back in college. So I called up the coach and said, hey, I'm coming to Los Angeles, Long Beach, and I'm going to join your team. And it was a great experience. Pacific Coast Club, they recruited national champions, world record holders, and Olympic champions. And so on the team, we had the best Olympic shot putters, javelin throwers, and then we competed as a team, and we competed all over Europe. And it was a great experience being with the Pacific Coast Club and knowing all these, and being teammates with all these Olympic champions and world record holders.
Well, you ran several miles under 4 minutes. That's obviously was the big barrier. What was it like to finally break that 4 minute mile for the first time?
It was good. It was back in back in February of 70 or something like that, mm-hmm. And I became the 36th person to break 4 minutes, and the person right after me. 5 days later was the great Steve Prefontaine, so that was kind of neat.
Well, one of the big races I think that, you know, folks may or may not know about, but the 1968 World Games, running the 1500 meters, I think, where it was in Stockholm, and you beat Kip Kano, who went on to win the Olympics in that event that year. That was had to be one of the highlight races of your career, I would think.
Yes, it was. By winning the 1500 meters in U.S. championships, I was on the U.S. team to Europe. And in that race in Stockholm, they had all these runners. They had the best. They had like Kip Keno and Mohamed Ghamoudi from Tunisia, Kip Keno from Kenya. And that last race, I was fortunate to win. And Kip Keno, he was second, and the guy from Sweden, he was third, and the fourth was Muhammad Gamudi. And after that race, I drank some water, and I should have known better drinking water, but I drank water out on a practice field. And on return trip from Stockholm, I got to New York. Before I got to New York, I was really getting sick on the airplane. And I thought, well, if I could just transfer from New York and make it to Denver, I'd be all right. And when I got to Denver, they had to take me off the plane, put me in an ambulance. I had 104 temperature. They took me to a hospital, and I was hospitalized. And they said it was a virus in the bloodstream, could be mononucleosis, whatever. And so I was hospitalized for several weeks, and then I had to get out and go to Lake Tahoe for the Olympic trials, and we had to run three races back-to-back consecutive days, just like they did in Olympic Games at high altitude. And the third race, I made it in the first two races. In the third race, they take the top three, and I think I ended up fifth, and I was just so weak. I just didn't have the, after being so sick, and I just didn't recover. But here, right after that race, they had the Olympic Games, and the guy that I beat, Kip Keno from Kenya, he ended up winning the gold medal in the 1500 meters, which I had just beaten a month before. And Muhammad Gamudi, who I beat, had won the 5000 meters in gold and got a silver in the 5000. And the Gardard from Sweden ended up on the Olympic team in the 800, 1500 meters, and then went on and won the steeplechase in Munich. So it was a disappointment getting sick again and training so hard so many years and knowing that this only comes up every 4 years and then you miss out from getting sick or injured.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, that had to be extremely disappointing to be so close to almost taste it, but then unfortunately some bad luck kind of kept you from fulfilling those dreams.
Yes, it did. You know, you train so hard. Olympics at 70 or 60 Olympic Games at Mexico is at 7,200 feet, and several years before that, I did Olympic training in Alamosa, Colorado, which is the same altitude as Mexico City, and I was getting very well acclimated to high altitude, and I was able to run well at high altitude, and I just thought my chances were very good going into Olympic Games, and unfortunately, I was sick prior to the trials and didn't make it all the way.
I'm taking after that, you kind of learned your lesson about drinking water after you mentioned that story earlier with Coach Francis. I guess the happens twice, you learn from it if you can make any sort of a joke and levity out of what had to be a difficult situation. Hey, I read an article that you did some testing for an elite distance runners. I think it was in Mesa, Arizona, with one of the top coaches for distance runners, and had to deal with altitude. I think Jim Ryan was involved in that, some of the all-time great distance runners. Tell us about that experience.
Dr. Jack Daniels, he is noted as the world's number one distance coach in by Running News and Track and Field News. And he knew, he was like a doctor, and he knew that people were going to have problems running at altitude at Mexico City. So he himself was an Olympian himself. And so in Alamosa, Colorado, several years prior to the Mexico Olympics, he invited runners like Jim Ryan, Conrad Nightingale, K-State, Tom Von Rudin, Tom Heinen from Minnesota, and myself to do experiments up there in Alamosa, checking your oxygen level. And so we did that, and it has become where all the universities now and big clubs and hospitals and everything else, they check your VO2, how much oxygen you can bring in. And he's the one basically adopted all this. And then we had tests later, like in Mesa, Arizona, 40 years later, see how we were doing. And we had a test 25 years later, see how elite runners were doing. So it was very interesting. And back then, I remember we'd have to do tests, and it was a very we'd run on a cinder track. We'd run a mile, and we'd have a nose clip on our nose so we couldn't breathe through our nose. We'd have a mouthpiece, and we had a big old long PVC tube running over towards the car. Jack Daniels would be sitting on the hood of the car with a big old look like a balloon. You blow it up, it's probably 5 foot diameter, and we'd blow up one of those before we got a half mile. He'd put a clip on it. We'd be running there, couldn't even breathe, put on a new bag, hand it to the other guy on the other side of the fender, and that's how they measured our oxygen intake. And he's the one basically specialized that, and we were the guinea pigs that basically started this.
That's fascinating. You see video and pictures of people doing that all the time now when they're training, but to be on the cutting edge and the breaking edge of this and when it first started, and then to come back 25 years later, that had to be pretty neat to I guess get together and kind of go through all that again.
Yes, it was. 25 years later, it was neat. You know, seeing all the guys. You know, you got Ryan there and all these guys. And back then, they were your competition. And here we're all old people, has-beens, and we could talk about our old stories and how we trained and everything else. But we'd all would run on a treadmill like that. And then when we got 40 years later, some of the guys could run on a treadmill. And I just had replacement hip surgery. I said, I can't run on treadmills. So I rode one of those bicycles, and they put this, and they tested our VO2 also. But surprisingly, a lot of us are still pretty good shape after 50 years.
Now, once a runner, always a runner, I've been told. I don't run that much, so I wouldn't know. But from those of my friends who do, once it's in your blood, so to speak, you can't get it out. We talked about Jim Ryan. How well did you know him, and maybe some of your interactions with him? Obviously, he is you talk about track and you know, breaking the 4 minute mile. Jim Ryan comes to most people's minds right away.
Yeah, Jim ran for Jim was in high school same time I was. He ran for Wichita East, which would have been a big school, and Phillipsburg, a small school. And so regular track meets, I never ran against him. Mm-hmm. And the first time I ran against Jim was the Kansas Relays, the Invitational High School Mile, where they invite some of the best high school runners from various states and state of Kansas. And then I ran against him in college, and of course I ran against him out of college, and I was on several teams with him. The last race I ran against Jim Ryan was back in 1971 at the San Diego Indoor Games, and let's see, he ended up winning in 356.6, I think it was, set a new world record indoors, and I was just right behind him at 358 flat. So that was my last time I raced against him.
Well, certainly one of the best to ever do it for the United States, and obviously we've talked about, you were right there with him and the others. We're talking with John Mason, former four-day state track and field and cross-country standout here on the Defend the Fort podcast. At the beginning, we mentioned you're in a lot of Hall of Fames. Obviously, you have a career like you did. The NAI Hall of Fame, the four-day state sports Hall of Fame. In fact, you were in the inaugural class, and when four-day state started their Sports Hall of Fame. They're a little probably behind the game in that regard. Well-deserved, you were in that initial class when you look at all the accolades and what you did, but that had to be special, not only to be recognized by your alma mater and going into their Hall of Fame, but going in there with the first class, that had to be extra special, I would think.
Yes, it was. Believe it or not, I didn't know what that was back in Hall of Fame. I just thought it was just to get together, and you know, they had Alex Francis and Cade Saran and all these coaches there, you know, in the initial one, and then they asked you to speak, and I didn't even know I was supposed to speak, and I just got up there and said something. But you know, after realizing it was a great honor, it really was, and then being selected on the Fort Hays State Hall of Fame committee, along with you, it's a great honor and selecting these here great athletes. Just been a lot of great athletes coming out of Fort A State.
No doubt about it, and it is really an honor to be a part of that, and very difficult task and naming people to each class, because it gets harder and harder because there's been so many great accomplishments and so many well-deserving of Hall of Fame recognition. I want to ask you, when you went to the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame in 09, pretty good group among those: Ted Owens, former KU basketball coach, and the late Eddie Sutton, who just passed away recently of coaching fame, Buckland native, and of course Oklahoma State most recently, but coached and had a stellar collegiate coaching career. You went in with a pretty fun class when you were inducted in 09 to the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yes, it was. You know, when you get a class and you get the people like Eddie Sutton, and then he was on there, as you said, from Oklahoma State and all that, and then you're like Ted Owens, he was in my class with me, the good basketball coach from KU, and Don Calhoun, the K-State football running back, mm-hmm. and then you have a bunch of these guys had been inducted before, and then you got a country bumpkin like myself. It really felt very honored to be in this elite group.
You know, we've talked about a lot about your running career. Anything that I've left out or we've left out that you wanted to mention or talk about? Because as I said at the beginning, you've run in so many big races in so many historic venues. Easy to forget about some of them, but is there any of them you wanted to share that maybe Ivan brought up for you today?
Well, I was telling you, when I was a sophomore in high school is when I started running.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being in the high school in the library, and I picked up a Sports Illustrated. It was back in, when was it? Probably about 1965. And Jim Beattie became the first person in the world to run a sub-4-minute mile indoors in Los Angeles Indoor Times. And that's when I just started running, and I said, this guy is my idol, Jim Beattie. And I thought, wow, unbelievable. So I just kind of followed him. He was an outstanding indoor runner. And what he did at the L.A. Indoor Games, he was the first to break 4 minutes in 3:58 and set a record, of course, a meet record. Exactly 9 years to that date, I ran at the L.A. Indoor Games, place where Jim Beattie set a world record, and he had the record there. I ended up tying his record exact time. He was the first person in California to break 4 minutes. I became the second person in the state of California to run a sub-4-minute mile right behind him. So it was... And here I'm in a program with him, tying his record along with Jim B., the guy who's my idol when I was a sophomore in high school.
That's pretty cool. That's a pretty neat story. Glad you shared that. And you kind of touched on indoor. We asked you about the difference cross country and track and field, and if you had a favorite. But the indoor to the outdoor 1500. I mean, obviously the elements and the weather becomes a factor. The difference in those, and do you prefer one or the other?
I liked running it indoors. There's a lot of difference now. Back in my days, they used to have board tracks, and they were very small. Even like in Kansas City, they had like 12 or 11 laps per mile. And they were boards, and they would spring up and down. And another factor, back in our days, you could smoke. And people would be in that Coliseum, and you'd be a cloud of smoke, and you'd have to run in there. It'd be like a fog. When you got done running, you just cough and cough and cough. But today, you look at the tracks. They're oversized tracks. They're like 200 meters. They're maybe 300 meters. They're long. They have a nice environment, and there's no smoking. But it was fun. But when you had like 11-lap track, people right on top of you, we'd go to run in Madison Square Garden. That place would be completely full, jam-packed with people. Of course, they'd all be smoking. And they'd all dress up. They'd have suit and ties on, believe it or not. And it was fun.
That's amazing.
And, yeah. And I, in another big race I remember back, is in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I ran a mile up there, and I set a national Canadian record in a mile, and I came just a couple of tenths of a second from being the first sub-4 minute miler of Canada.
Wow, that's pretty impressive as well. So not only great in America, great internationally, and we're visiting with John Mason from former four-day state track and field and cross-country standout. It's funny you mentioned, you see the old pictures of those indoor meets, and you can just see the cloud of smoke in there. It had to be very difficult for the runners, and obviously we approach things much differently now, but it is interesting to see some of those old photos of those indoor races. And some of the environments were a bit challenging for you guys.
Yeah. And back in those days, we get on an airplane and get an all-night flight from Los Angeles to New York, and you'd be sitting right next to a person that could smoke. They'd allow you to smoke. Then you're sitting there smoking. Then you get in a room at a hotel, and people had been smoking there. And then you get in the Coliseum, and you're running, and it's just a thick smoke. After you're done running, you know, you're running a four-minute mile, and you're breathing all that smoke in your lungs. Then you go back to your hotel, and you just cough all night.
Times were certainly different back then than they are now.
They sure
probably for the better, but hey, we appreciate it. Hopefully we touched on everything you wanted to share with us. Such a pleasure to visit with you and reminisce about your outstanding career, not only when at Four-Day State, but representing Four-Day State past your time at the university and running and representing the United States. Had to be a pretty cool honor to do that. I know a lot of all the Four-Day State folks are certainly proud of you and all of your accomplishments you had while as a Tiger and since then.
Well, you know, Fort Hays is the greatest place, and my grandchildren, if they become runners, I'll highly recommend them go to Fort Hays. The coach was like a father to me. All alumni, I just can't say much. I can only say so much for Fort Hays. They were the best.
Well, John, we have certainly appreciated this visit and reliving your outstanding career, and as always, appreciate the time and looking forward to more of those Four-Day State alumni or Four-Day State Hall of Fame meetings with you as we keep putting folks into the Tiger Sports Hall of Fame.
Okay, Gerard. I sure enjoyed it, and being as old as I am, it's kind of hard to remember all these facts, you know.
I think you did well. I think you did okay.
And
that's, okay. And the nice thing about this, the further about they go, people don't remember them either, so it's okay. There's no problem.
Yeah, I mean, that was 55 years ago, you know. And, you know, my old brain doesn't think like it used to. But and those old legs are getting a little sore from running all those miles. I'm still hanging in there.
Well, that's good to hear. We certainly appreciate it. Hey, I had a great visit. Loved chatting with you, and we'll see you soon.
All right, Gerard. Have a good day.
You bet. That is John Mason, Fort Hays State Tiger Sports Hall of Fame member, NAIA Hall of Fame member, Kansas Sports Hall of Fame member, former outstanding track and field and cross-country student athlete at Fort Hays State University, our latest guest on the Defend the Fort podcast.